Let's pray. Because God, we want to openly and corporately ask you to teach us, soften hearts, to open our eyes, to cause us to get outside of our self-righteous boxes, who think that we are pleasing and deserving of your favor. Cause us to realize what we are and our desperate need for a Savior and your process of grace and redemption that you call us to. So, thank you for your word. Thank you that we don't have to go around blind trying to figure out what you want and how you think and how you feel. Thank you that you lay it out pretty clear if we're just willing to listen. If we're just willing to look at it in truth. So cause us to worship you in spirit and truth by honoring you, by being willing to be submissive to you, by willing to hear your voice and be obedient. Amen. Exodus, the Ten Commandments. Your sister, they left? You look very pretty today. Yeah. Did Becca's mom go home? Okay. We are on verse 13 of Exodus chapter 20. We talked about it last week. You shall not murder. King James says, do not kill. Wrong translation. The actual translation, direct translation, would be no murder. That's not necessarily because they didn't know good English. It's just that would be the direct. That's the way they spoke. So, no murder. It's not okay. Most of us would think that we have this one pretty well licked, you know. That one's pretty easy. Don't have any murderers in the building, so we're okay. And I would hope that was the case, or hope that you've repented if you have. But it goes deeper than that, and I just want to, last week we talked about the murdering of people aspect. This week we need to talk about Jesus' perspective on what that means, what that really looks like. As with the rest of the commandments, they go deeper than they look on the surface. And we're called in this age as those who, since the cross, we are a people who can be set free from the bondage of sin and live in the power of the Holy Spirit in the process of redemption, of renewing our mind, of renewing our bodies, of renewing ourselves from fallen man to redeemed man. And as far as I'm concerned, as far as I think the Bible is concerned, that would be a primary mark of a Christian. Are you in process of redemption? You know, are we in process of being sanctified, being set apart, being changed? And I don't know that there's a lot of neutral ground in that. I don't think that stalling out is really the issue. I think that sin is always willing. The enemy is always willing, always prowling, always looking for a way to take us in a negative direction and solidify and enhance our sin nature. So we're either in the process of redemption or we're continuing to go backwards as fallen people. So this one, do not murder. Again, on the surface, that would seem pretty plain. It would seem like we've all got that one pretty, don't murder someone. But again, we talked about last week, I don't know that it's even that simple, because I think that the important part is the critical thing for us as people, is God's people, is people in submissive to God, is not just to outwardly be obedient to things, not just to outwardly do things, but to inwardly agree with God about it, okay? That's a very critical thing. You know, we oftentimes look and go, okay, I'm not supposed to do that. God says don't do that, so I'm not going to do it. Well, that isn't enough. You know, to still want to do that, that's what I want to do. I really want to, but I won't do it because God said not to do it. Do you realize that that is still rebellion? Because it is still God's view of that thing is that this is not good for you. This is not good for our relationship with Him. This is giving over to the power and authority and worship of the enemy. That sin is a process. Sin is something that is God gives us rules about. God gives us laws about for our own good to enhance our relationship with Him and cause us to be holy. For us to look at what He calls terrible and for us to see it as something good or something that we want should still evoke in us the absolute desperate need to change our minds, to change our hearts. Because if I see sin as good, I am still willing to stay in rebellion. Okay? And we tend to, on the surface, go, okay, I'm not going to do it. I really want to, but I'm not going to do that. But I really like that good thought about that. You know, I really like thinking about that. I really like feeling that way. We should hate sin. God hates sin. Sin causes God to be angry. Okay? And God hates sin. So if we love sin, even if we don't do sin, we're still in rebellion. Does that make sense? I know it's probably not liked. Okay? What do we have to give up? We have to be willing to give up liking sin. That's a difficult thing. Okay? We like to like sin. Okay? And so what we do is we become religious people on the outside or in front of people or outwardly. We don't do those things because then we're not going to be accepted as good people doing it. But still we remain on the inside that I still want to hold on to the fact that I really like that. But I really like to think about that. But I really like to, you know, I wish I could, you know, okay, I won't, but I wish I could. Honestly, not doing it, that's a good first step. Okay? I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm not saying go ahead and do it just because you want to. Okay? But that's only a step. That's not obedience or submission to God. Because to disagree with God, you're saying, God, you're wrong. You say this is a terrible thing. I don't think it's so bad. I know you say not to do it, so I guess I'm not getting it. But I don't agree. To disagree with God is to say that we are smarter than God, that we are wiser than God, that God is wrong in His perception. Or in this day and age, what would we say? Well, that's your opinion, and I have mine. We'll disagree to disagree. Are any of those things have any value in a right relationship with God? They have negative value. They have degenerative value. So the important thing is, are we willing to agree with God in our hearts about sin? Are we willing to hate sin as God hates sin? Because again, we all have, our flesh likes to like sin. Likes to love sin. And we want to hold on to that little feeling of whatever that sin often is something that makes us feel good, right? Gives us a little adrenaline rush. Whether it's lusting after chocolate or lusting after women or whatever it is. That it's something that gives us a little charge, and we think about it, and it makes us feel a little good, and we want to do it, we think about it, and not even doing it makes us feel, gives us a little perk, you know, doing it. That is not agreeing with God about sin. You know, we often talk about it we've talked about it a lot with men. You know, I've heard some absolutely absurd absurd ways of dealing with sexual sin, you know, by men who supposedly were leaders in church. Well, I choose to only look at a woman from, you know, from here up, you know, and that, you know, because I don't want to lust, you know, doing it. So I'm only going to look at women from here up doing it, you know. But you need to change your heart, okay? Because you look at your, you only look at your daughter from here up? What would we say about that? You're a perverse man. You're sick. That if you looked at your daughter some other ways, you would be thinking sexually about her? We'd go, that's wretched. You're a wretched, evil, wicked man doing that, right? Anybody here disagree with that? I hope not. Okay? How is it any different if you look at someone besides your wife? In God's eyes, it is not. The necessity is not to restrain or white knuckle against sin. The necessity is to agree with God about sin. To see whatever woman, whatever other sister, brother, woman, whatever other woman in here, is to see her as my sister. And to realize that for me to think sexually about her would be as perverse as me thinking sexually about my sister. Right? Or my mother, or whoever else I'm thinking, or my child. Right? That is agreeing with God about sexual sin. And that is the road to victory in men, period. Not white-knuckling it. Do I think you should get a hold of your butt and not do wrong things? I do. But that's only a start. It is to remain in sin to still have the craving and longing to do that and not to... Will the enemy still tempt us with that? Will our flesh still want to erupt? Yes. What is my response to be? I'm to look at her, see her as my sister. Not in a false way, not in a pretend way, in a real way as God does. And to see that it, and to be angry and violent about the temptation of the enemy to get me to lust after my little girl or little daughter or sister or whoever it might be. And to be angry about that. To want to defend that woman. It doesn't, I don't care if she's dressing sexually. I don't care if she's acting sexually. It doesn't matter. Our desire as men should be as it would be my sister or my mother or my little daughter is to give her a coat or something. Right? And cover her up. So, God cares about the heart. That's what he cares about. The outward actions, if they're not just, if not the response of the heart, then we're a hypocrite. And we will immediately start becoming self-righteous and remain self-righteous and only grow in that self-righteousness. If we are not willing to have our hearts renewed, our minds renewed, the way we think renewed, to agree with God about our lives. What does this have to do with murder? None of us really secretly sitting here really want to go murder somebody, right? At least not at the moment. I mean, but, you know, so what does this have to do with thinking about that? Well, I would contend that on the hardline murder issue, we are not in agreement with God. Okay? I would contend that there is work to do in all of us, and that we are very easily become a product of our culture and a product of our society, a product of our perversion of the world that we live in. You know, we talked some about abortion last week, and I understand. I mean, our response, so often within Christendom, my daughter and I talk about this quite a bit. Obviously, she's dealing with women who are pregnant and sees the other, you know, Becky down in Texas and, you know, women that are pregnant. She lives in the Bible Belt. So in the Bible Belt, you know, things are a little different in case you haven't been there. It's a different world kind of deal, a different thinking. You would think, well, that's all great. There's a church in every corner. I mean, a Baptist church of some sort. First Baptist, Third Baptist, Second Baptist, Baptist, this Baptist. I mean, it's unbelievable. There's churches everywhere. And everybody goes to church. I mean, the first thing you do when you greet somebody, you know, you would never think of it here. Well, what church do you go to? I mean, on the street, you know, because everybody goes to church doing it. Does that mean everybody's Christians? No, it doesn't, by the way. Just because they go to church doesn't mean. I don't know what the populace is. Do I think there's some value gain in a culture that exonerates God and the Bible outwardly and publicly, I think there's some value to that. But you also have a real strong propensity to become pretty self-righteous, you know? The same mentality that would make you feel proud to be a Texan, I guess, you know, doing it. I mean, if you've never met a Texan who isn't proud of being a Texan, okay? I mean, incredibly proud of being Texan. You know, I mean, like, there is, if you don't live in Texas, you're like second tier at best, and like going down from there after that, Texas is, why? I don't know. It makes no sense if you go hang out in Texas. I mean, I think it's like being so defensive if you're a really ugly pug dog or something, you know, that you have to be defensive of it because it's so ugly, there's no defense for the thing, you know. And I think it's the same thing with Texas on some degree. I mean, what do you have to be so proud of? Nonetheless, the problem at times, and Becky sees it down there, is that there's a fair amount of activists protesting abortion clinics, okay? And, you know, I'm not saying right or wrong, you know. I would say done right, correct. Done wrong, wrong. And her take is, but do these people have compassion? Do these people have compassion for a woman who is willing to murder her baby because of convenience? And do you have compassion on what in this world has forced you and shaped you and formed you so terribly into such a place that you're willing to move to this point? And do you have compassion and grace and mercy towards this person no different than any other person who's been held captive in bondage to sin? Okay? It's a very, I will stand absolutely strong on abortion, okay, as murder, okay? But because it is, and to think otherwise is to disagree with God. But do we have compassion for the person who has committed murder? Do we have compassion for the person who has stolen? Do we have compassion for the person who has committed adultery? Do we have compassion for those who have been held captive by the enemy to destroy their lives and destroy the lives of other people? If we don't have compassion and grace towards them, we are not exhibiting God's character and God's nature. That does not mean we should not hate the sin. One of the problems is that we go, well, they already feel bad enough. They already feel terrible about what they've done, which I cannot fathom. I mean, it is something so deep in your soul, so innately contrary to the way God designed a woman. So this is something that, I mean, I just want to hug and fall at their feet and go, man, I'm sorry, you know, that this world has done this, because it's a terrible thing on doing this. I mean, it's not a matter of condemnation. I mean, who are we to throw the first stone? It's not a matter of condemnation. But the mentality that to disagree with God about a sin in order to make a person not feel so bad, let me just tell you, that never works right. That never works right. Okay? To say, I need to not say, you know, well, it's alright, it's just your choice, or it's to disagree with God about sin in order to think you're going to be loving towards a person is to say God is wrong. Because to understand God is far, loves that person far more than we do. And he still hates sin. And he still is angry about sin. Okay? The problem is that we've become very calloused, right? If somebody takes their baby, their young little infant, and can no longer deal with the stress of being a mom, and up all night, and trying to work, and trying to make a living, and her husband's, she doesn't have a husband, you know, probably, he's been as, you know, let me just overshadow something. Abortion is a response, is a product of irresponsible men. irresponsible, immoral men. You say, well, the woman was in agreement. I don't care. It's irresponsible, selfish, perverse men is the reason. And that's the bottom line. Do away with that. We don't have abortion. Right? So, it's not about putting it on the woman. That's a terrible thing. And it's why women have said, I have the right to choose, because men are jackasses. Well, you're probably right. If you're in the situation, you're associated with the jackass of a man, probably. Okay? So, men are the perpetrators and cause of such a terrible thing. But, we get very, I want to throw this out there because I think it's important how we easily don't agree with God and lose sight of God's perspective. If a woman takes her small infant and drowns him in the bathtub, what is that? Murder. And she's a monster. Who could do that, right? And we all feel this way, right? Anybody not feel that that would be a terrible, unbelievable, horrendous act? It's just an immediate thing. You feel that way. We still all... By the way, that's a right response. Now, the desire should be to hug the woman and hold her colors and go, what has shaped you? What has tormented you? How has the enemy been able to drive you to such a point in your life? Okay? Compassion and grace and mercy should always be our response. But we should hate murder. And anybody who willingly commits murder, you know, murder is murder. We know that, right? That would be murder. Because you didn't want your little baby, your infant, we drowned him in the bathtub. Or however, beat his head in with a hammer. I don't care. Whatever. Right? Oh, David, you're being awful graphic doing it. Yeah. It's murder, right? But you do it in a nice building, fancy building uptown. Oh, well. Do we feel the same way? Do we respond the same way? Because if we don't agree with God about it. Okay? It's murder. It's no different. It is no less, no different. Okay? What does that mean? You know, that means that we are left with a world full of terribly hurting people inside. That need to know the forgiveness and love and mercy of God, not only directly from Him, but directly from us. Okay? We should hate that to the extent that we, you know, what is the cause of this? You know, it's an amazing thing, you know? Whenever we showed up with six kids somewhere, they go, don't you know what causes that? Right? Don't you know what causes that, dude? I'm doing that? You know, that's people's response. Whenever there's an unwanted pregnancy, we don't say that anymore. We don't go, don't you know what causes that? That is the point where we should think, immorality causes that. Irresponsible men cause that. Cause murder. Because they're unwilling to be responsible with their sexuality. But, I throw that out there, and again, to love people is not to diminish the sin. Right? We should have no different response when that's happening in that hospital. And it's not just, it's irrefutable at this point, you know? Life happens at the point of conception, scientifically. It's not an if thing anymore. So scientifically, life happens at the point of conception. But you weren't looking, whatever. And most babies are aborted these days at a time when those lives are easily saved if they came out of the womb and were born early. So this is not an issue. This is an issue of I don't want, I do want, I feel like it, I don't feel like it. And again, The dangerous thing about this, understand something. The dangerous thing is for us to allow ourselves to disagree with God about sin is to allow sin to prosper. It is not the correct response to say, oh, it's okay, homosexuality is okay, transgender is okay, whatever, that's your choice, that's doing whatever. Do you know what that does to a generation of children? That says, oh, sin's okay. Mom and dad lived that way. Mom and dad thought that. That's what they said. And so they think it is. Right? So they all dress in rainbow stuff at the middle school and walk around. Because they're going to celebrate Gay Pride Week doing it. What do they know? You know? Because we did not hate sin. Does that mean we should be homophobic? We should go beat homosexuals? Well, that's ridiculous. We should hate what sin does to people. We should hate what the enemy does to people. We should hate people, hate the people who are held in bondage and captivity by rebellion to God. And we should long to rescue those souls with the truth and love of God and the gospel. But if we don't hate sin, we won't be passionate about rescuing them. If we don't hate sin and agree with God about sin and the destructive and terrible nature of it, sin will prosper. Right? We're going to grow up with a generation of people that just absolutely, homosexuality is fine. This is right. I mean, it's an absurd concept, right? The same people that, we talked about it last week, the thing that gives people dignity and worth and value is the Bible. Not evolution. Okay? Not chance you were born. That's survival of the fittest. And if you hadn't thought about it, homosexuality does not survive in that equation. It is completely contrary to evolution, right? It is the destruction or the elimination of humankind. Homosexuality is completely contrary to what they claim to believe in. I don't believe in God. What do we agree with God and stand strong? That, again, you know, what does that look like? Billboards on the street? I would say it looks more like compassion and grace and mercy and loving those people that are in trouble. You know, I mean, one of the concepts that we've talked about from day one here, pretty much from day one, was a birth center here, you know. And I really think Becky should come on and be about that. But was a birth center here. Because what do you to that high school girl that's pregnant? What do you do? Beat her up. You can't get an abortion. That's terrible. You're going to kill your baby. I don't think that's probably the loving way to approach it. Okay? Or the effective way to approach it. Right? The effective way to approach it is, man, what can I do? How can I come alongside you? Obviously, here we are. But here we are. That's a big here we are. You know, you're pregnant. You know? That's not, I want a do-over. I want that party. I don't want to go to that party I did 2 months ago, or whatever it might be. What do you do? Yeah, do you come alongside of them? Do you, I'll take the baby. You know? Is that what it takes in our world? Probably. You know? I'll take the baby. You can come and live with us. We'll support you. We'll take care of you. Don't commit murder, honey, because that's only going to make your life way worse. Because the effects of murder on the state of your soul is the effects of murder on the state of your soul. I don't care if it's killing your baby in the bathtub or killing it in the hospital. The effects are the same, whether we consciously deal with it or not. Okay? To keep the enemy from destroying her life. So, it's both sides. I'm sorry. God is violent and angry. I looked up, we'll get into, because Jesus talks about, it isn't just the act of I murder somebody. Jesus talks about, when we look in the New Testament, he deals with it directly. You say don't murder, but I say, okay, that the root of murder is anger. In uncontrolled anger. And obviously, God gets very angry. I looked up angry in concordance, you know, where it gives you everywhere the word used, you know, in the Bible. Most of the time, you know who's angry? God. Most of the time the word anger is used, you know who it's used of? God. Now, we don't like that very much because that's not a very nice grandpa, is it? I mean, an angry grandpa? Grandpas are supposed to be sweet, right? Nice. Spoil the grandkids, right? Anger is an attribute, an absolute, irrevocable attribute of God. As much as His love. And the truth is, if you cannot diminish His anger, or you diminish His holiness and His righteousness. Okay? And God's holiness and righteousness, we say, oh, you can't diminish that. That is absolute, and that is perfect, and that is complete. So is His anger. What's His anger over? Sin. What should our response be towards sin? Anger. We should hate sin as God hates sin. Okay? And to think of it differently than God thinks, because He doesn't know best. He's just kind of stuck in His ways, or He's just kind of old school, or, I mean, why can't you be a lot more progressive like we are today and just kind of, hey, whatever. Right? It's all right, bro. You think what you want, I think what I want, right? I mean, that's not the God that created this world, and it's not the God who will judge this world. The God who judges the world is absolute in His nature. He's absolute in His love. He's absolute in His mercy. He's absolute in His compassion. He's absolute in His holiness and His righteousness. He's absolute in His wrath. He's absolute in His anger. He's absolute in His judgment. That is who God is. Okay? Our view of sin, we should hate sin. I mean, the concept, and it gets thrown out there way too lightly, but it's way too profound to not have it shape our lives. We should hate the sin and love the sinner. That's an absolute truth. We are called to love the sinner. Loving my children sometimes meant spanking them. Loving them does not mean going, oh, it's okay, honey, that you're being a brat. Oh, it's okay, honey, that you took the toys from your brother. It's okay, honey, that you're what? No, it doesn't mean that we diminish the sin to love them. And for us to do that in our culture, does that mean that we should be about the people who wear the billboards up and down, you know, picketing the abortion center? I don't know much value's in that. Do I condemn the people who are willing to stand in front of an abortion clinic? I don't condemn them. I don't condemn them. Maybe they have more go than me, you know, doing it. Because if I saw my neighbor drowning her child in the swimming pool and stood over the fence and watched, what would you think? What would you think? That I was a man of value. That I was a man of courage. That I was a man who had a sense of right and wrong. Or would you think you're a pathetic man who is not willing to love and care about people? So, to eliminate our obligation and our responsibility in culture, and to try to give this false sentimentality definition to love when it comes to people, is from the pit of hell. You know, for me to stand there and watch that and go, oh well, that's her choice. Oh well, you know, I don't want to condemn her. She already feels really bad. I mean, that's not a right response. And it would be acceptable by no one here, right? So, what is to be our response? We need to agree with God about sin. We need to hate sin. Whether abortion is just one form of murder, my point is, we accept it. What do you? I don't accept it. I don't know that anybody here accepts it. Okay? You feel way differently if she drowned her kid in the bathtub than you do if she went to the doctor. I would say that's accepting it. I would say that's being conditioned by our culture to not agree with God about sin. And we do it in all different ways. You know, we do it about sexuality, right? They're having sex before they're married. Oh well, no big deal. Everybody does. I mean, come on. It wasn't long ago. They just did away with the law in Eastern Idaho that fornication put you in jail. Did that accomplish a whole lot? Well, I don't know. You're not going to legalize morality. But the cultural acceptance is the most destructive thing that can happen. When a culture accepts wrong as right, it is a desperate fast track to degeneracy and destruction of the culture. And for us to think that it is compassionate and caring and loving to have a different view of murder than God does is not helping anyone, is not loving anyone, and is setting up a whole society and a whole culture for failure. Okay? With our kids included. But we don't, in Jesus' eyes though, all of us have committed murder. It's like when you look at the Ten Commandments. There's nobody here that gets to stand on a high horse. Okay? Does that mean we should continue? Oh well, you know, I thought I held my tongue well last night, you know, I'm just a sinner. We were in the discussion with some people, talking to some people doing it. It is not enough to accept the fact that I'm a lawbreaker, that I'm an immoral man, worthy of death, that I break the King Commandments, that's just the way it is. That's not okay. Jesus died on the cross to set us free from the bondage of sin. Yeah, you're born that way. You know, somebody who doesn't have the Spirit of God within him, for us to stand outside and throw rocks or condemn him, they don't have a choice. They're pawns of the enemy. That doesn't mean as a culture, oh, he's not a Christian, he murdered that person, I guess we should just let him walk. He's not a Christian, he doesn't know better. We can't do that as a society, or we will degenerate. God set up an order of things that causes society to function in a healthy way. To go outside of that order of things, including the Ten Commandments, is to throw our culture in the trash can on doing it. God's rules work no matter what, and social justice is also different than personal justice, right? And the Old Testament is that way, you know, talked about being judged by a group of your peers the way we set our culture up, you know, judges that were set up within the tribes to make a judgment about did you accidentally kill them? Was it manslaughter? Or was it murder? Or did you purposely do that? They had to figure that out back then, and still do, and there was a different result and response to it, okay? We are not to accept the fact that I am just a lawbreaker. We should mourn and weep over the fact that I have not only spit in the face of God, not only discredited His gospel, His love, His mercy, His grace towards us, His free gift towards us that He offers us in freedom. But it is that caused destruction in this world that He's created to the people around and inflict wickedness on people around me. We should feel terrible about it, and we should want to say, God, help me not continue to be a lawbreaker. Here we are, though, in Matthew. He's on the Sermon on the Mount. And the Sermon on the Mount, again, I think is a very, very important piece of scripture that we don't talk about, because the Sermon on the Mount is Jesus saying, what should it look like in my kingdom? Okay? When he is king in the new world order, when he did pay the price, not when everybody was propitiation, was looking forward to it with a calf and a bull, an ox, and a goat, and sheep, and they were sacrificing and spilling their blood, and they were burning them, and they had burnt offerings, and they had all these things in order, looking forward to the fulfillment of the Messiah, the perfect lamb that would shed his blood. Okay? When, in fact, to the point, I mean, look forward to it so much. I was just reading somewhere last night, you know, and if you sacrifice an ox an ox and something that has a blemish on it, you're worthy of death. You know, God said, that's not okay. You know, why? Well, because it was looking forward to the perfect Messiah, to the sinless Messiah. Okay? Now I'm, you know, God was very, very purposely leading up to Jesus. When Jesus died, things changed. And now we literally can be set free from the bondage and power of Satan. Okay? Will we still be under the influence at times? He's always going to try to influence. And so will our flesh. Our flesh will always still want to come alive. You know, it's going. I would contend that killing our flesh is what we're called to do. But man, it wants to resurrect itself and come back to life. And to the degree we do put it to death is the degree that we'll not have the ability to come back. And the enemy will not have the ability to use our flesh to live in rebellion and sin. But the new order of things, when Jesus died on the cross, things changed. Okay? The Spirit, he says, now the Spirit of God, the Shekinah glory of God, which used to dwell only in the Holy of Holies, if you went there without unconfessed sin, it wasn't perfection that went there, but it was no unconfessed sin went in there. If you went in there, you got struck dead. I don't know how many people they pulled out by a rope. Doesn't really talk about it. We don't see it, but that's what he said would happen, right? Maybe the absolute belief and understanding of that caused them to be very careful. Kind of like we should be about sin and its nature. We should have a different perception of it. Not, oh, God's okay with it. Don't worry about it. Dummy it down. God won't really do that. He was just kidding. You know, try it. See what happens, you know, doing it. They feared God at those times, and God showed himself one worthy of being feared. So now we have the ability to live on a higher level of holiness. Sinless perfection? I don't really see it happening in our lives. But the ability is there. It's just that we are fleshly people that are unwilling to eradicate the sin from our life and agree with God about it. And so we will continue to get pounded and beat up. But the truth is, Jesus always went to a different level in what it looked like, right? Here he is again. He says, in verse 21 of chapter 5, he says, But you have heard that the ancients were told, you shall not commit murder. And whoever commits murder shall be liable to the court. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court. And whoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be, and that word means empty-headed or good for nothing or piece of something, right? I mean, shall be guilty before the Supreme Court. And whoever shall say, you fool, probably would include freaking idiot, you know, or whoever we say those things. I'll try to be careful with the language that's used in the quietness of our cars or wherever, or under our breath, or however it is. Okay? Shall be guilty enough to go into the hell of fire. They didn't go kill anybody. Right? Jesus takes it to a whole different level. And says, the root of murder, the cause of murder, is the passionate exertion of your flesh. It's always been seen that anger is the strongest passion that we have. I don't know quite that is, but it was always thought of that way when you look at the word. And it causes us to murder. I mean, we joke about it. We make fun of it. Sometimes we feel like it. You know, I was so mad I could have killed him. Right? We've all said that. Right? You know, not really funny, you know, but kind of funny, you know, doing it, but not funny. That is a description of where it comes from. I am willing to exert my will, take away his rights, his God-created image of God that he was created in, to disrespect that, to disrespect the image of God, to dishonor the fact that God loves him, that God died on the cross for him, and I'm going to take his life. That's different than social justice, understand me, okay? It is imperative that if somebody in our culture is willing to act in that way, okay? If I am willing to disregard the rights of other people's lives, I cannot function in a society. And I would contend, pay with your life. Why? The same reason that they didn't go walking into the temple with unconfessed sin, right? Because they feared for their life, right? They feared that God said, you'll die if you do that. So what did they do? Well, they made sure they confessed their sins, to sacrifice for their sin prior to going in, okay? God says that. When you read the Old Testament, he says time again, do it so that they will watch, that people will see and not sin. And not act this way. In a culture that's necessary. If someone, we cannot live in a culture where people are willing to disregard the fact that you have the rights of a person created in the image of God, by God, and I need to honor that, and I have no right to take your life because of my anger, because I don't like you, because I'm pissed off on doing that. And if we do that, we call that murder. We say if you murder, we call that a capital offense. We say that it's worthy of capital punishment. I would agree with that. I think without capital punishment, we're in big trouble. You know, I mean, it only takes raising a 2-year-old to know that. If they don't understand there's consequences for what they do, they don't go, okay, I'll be good because there's no consequences for what I do, right? That's not the way it goes, right? Never. It goes the opposite way. When there's no consequences, boom, they're in. I can work this, right? And it's the same way for a 40-year-old. It's the same way for all ages doing it. So we tend to think, again, that murder is the issue. He said, no, the issue is the heart again, right? Now, oh man, this was a tough one for me. Because I can get angry. Huh? Now, and I can get angry pretty quick. Right, Bill? Like, not really hesitant to stand on the gas in most things in life. Unfortunately, I mean, I'm set the last 2 weeks going, what do I say? Because here's the deal. What is essential and what is critical? Because we tend to go, I got mad. Sorry. How about if I stabbed you with a knife? You went, ah, sorry. What would you say? You would say, I don't think you see this like I do, do you? Right? I don't think you agree with me on how bad this really is, right? I think you have a very diminished view of what you just did. Right? And having that diminished view causes us to not deal with sin in our lives. Having a diminished view, not agreeing with God about our sin, causes us to not deal with our sin. Right? If culturally our sin is acceptable, we accept it. Anger being one of them. I'm fortunate that I've had some brothers around me, including my sons, that God has used to begin making sure I understood this was not okay. You know? That I've used a knife and said I'm sorry. You know? You know, my response should be, God help me, I can never do that again. I should never do that again. Jesus says, getting really pissed off at somebody for a wrong reason is damnable, is worthy of hellfire. Now, for me, that's a wake-up call. For me, that's a realization that I need to renew my mind and have my mind renewed to agree with God about my sin. Because Jesus says it. We say, we want to stand, again, proudly on the fact I've never murdered anyone. Good. Don't have to worry about that 10. One in the 10, you know. Like a couple other ones are a problem, you know, but I don't have to worry about that one. I'm doing it. It's not true. Jesus says, I care about the heart. And for your passionate anger coming from your flesh, not directed by the Spirit of God, this is murder. That should change my view of it. No different than evaluating the beautiful hospital and what happens there with somebody's bathtub. Right? How our thinking should reorient to agree with God on what murder is, murder is. And anger. Any of you ever, like, you lose your temper? Anybody? No? Nobody loses their temper? Never your kids? Never, you know? Yeah. Never. I mean, do you realize, I'm sorry, moms, man. I mean, it's a response of mom. Moms get so tired. I mean, I don't want to beat my kid all day, so what do? I start yelling, you know? I start, you know, threatening. I start, "Stop it now! It's enough!" Yeah. And that produces an action, a response in the kids, you know, doing it. What does God see that as? What does God see us acting out of anger towards it? Now, don't misunderstand something. The passive man who does not get riled up and angry is not necessarily in any way. In fact, I would contend is not a righteous, holy man. Because God gets angry. Right? If God gets angry and we're to be like God, would that mean I should get angry? Yes. That's a yes. Okay? If someone does not get angry at anything, is not riled up about anything, there's a problem. I would say he's a passive, selfish, disagreeing with God man. But, Is it within my flesh because of my offense? Or is it because my God has been offended with the sin? Is it hating the sin and loving the sinner? Again, I wish somehow we could wash that away so none of us ever heard it, right? And do introduce it for the first time. Go, wow, what an amazing concept, right? Wow, that makes sense. Okay? Because it does, okay? We should hate the sin. We should be angry at sin. We should be angry at the enemy of God. We should love and be compassionate and gracious and merciful towards the people around us. And the same with our children. It's not wrong to be angry about something they did. Okay? It is wrong to respond in the flesh. It is wrong to get angry. It is terribly wrong to spank them in anger. I don't know too many things more destructive than to spank a child in anger. That's a terrible thing. That will cause a child towards a hard-heartedness and wrath. Okay? That will provoke a child to anger. Well, we're supposed to spank, not in anger. Not in anger. We spank out of love because it is the responsibility of a father and mother to discipline. And the one who is not disciplined should question the fact. Who is not scourged by their parents. We can say by a parent. God says, I scourge those I love. Because I love them. And as fathers, we are to discipline in that way too. Out of anger? Never. Never. The dichotomy of one is such a terrible act of murder if someone would do that to a child who was just born, whether born a few minutes ago, and by the way, infanticide's a common practice thing. I heard one of the guys, the governor of one of the states down south recently, he was in an interview. He's going to run for president. And I don't know who he is. There's about 47 of them now. But he was asked, you know, so, and he's a doctor. He's the governor. He's asked. So what happens if, you know, if the baby happens to come out alive? You know, like she didn't get killed by the saline solution or injection or whatever you did to it. Okay, what happens to the baby coming to life? Well, then we'll set it aside, make sure it's comfortable, and we'll have the discussion with the mother what we want to do. This is national TV. Somebody's a governor, thinks they're going to run for president. That's how ugly it has gotten. How tragic it has gotten. Again, the mentality and the distinction there of how we view it is not a lot different than the fact of how we view me going up to going, I hate you, bam, shooting you, and going, you're a freaking idiot, man. Right? Actually, might have deserved the second one. No. It is for me to lose my temper and me to respond to people out of my temper. How does Jesus see it? He says it's worthy of hellfire. It's not okay. That's a big deal. That's a big reorientation, right? Because we don't see it as that big of a deal, right? Right? I mean, it's kind of like, of course you get mad, you know? It's the way I was raised, right? Mom and Dad got mad and I thought, oh, I don't want to do that. So I changed my behavior and learned what not to do to make them really mad and I don't need to do this. Yeah. Not a good thing. Not a good parenting. Okay? It's not what should teach you what is right and wrong. It's not how it should be taught. It will cause you to have a hard heart, cause you to be a hypocrite. You will raise a hypocrite. And a child who learns how to perform for people, but not live his life before God. To not submit to authority, but to be compliant on the outward side in order to selfishly get his way. Anger in parenting will teach a child to be compliant, not submissive. And there's a big difference. See? A compliant child knows how to manipulate the world around him. And the more you discipline or the more you correct wrongly, the more you will teach them to be a hypocrite. And the more difficult time they will have in a relationship of submission to God. Instead, they will learn probably to be a good hypocrite and a good churchman. To be one way on Sunday because this is what pleases, and act another way when I do got to do what I want. This couple we're talking, it was actually a good visit. They stayed at our house for a couple days. They were friends of Yanni's from Africa. The guy's deaf. He actually is translating the Bible in sign language. 400 different sign languages in the world doing it, that people talk. And that is their language. That is the language they talk. And there's only a very few of them. There's only, I don't know how many, 30 of them or something that have the Bible they can read. So they're doing it in sign language. Anyway, that's a whole different deal. But now, unfortunately, I just told you who it was, so now I can't tell you the story. So I was going to use it as an example of parenting, you know. But I wouldn't want to do that. Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, we're in the World Wide Web, you know, and some people do listen. So, I don't want to condemn good people, happy kids, good kids. I don't even want to go there because. Now you'll know what I was going to say. So, I think I'll go there. Yeah, well, I'm not talking about them, but, you know, here's the thing. Okay. That won't work. So, I guess it's been a couple of weeks of soul searching as all the Ten Commandments have been, but in looking at, wow, do I agree with God about my sin? No, I haven't agreed with God about my sin. I would say in the last year I've begun to see the destructive nature of my sin, you know, effect it had on my sons and daughter and son-in-laws and the people around me. I am terribly sorry and don't want to do it anymore. I want to agree with God about my sin, and, you know, it's an amazing thing because I can say He can easily set you free from alcoholism, okay? God can deliver you, right? He can deliver you from drugs. But I'm not sure He can deliver me from anger. Oh, he's not in that business, is He? You know? He is. He is. And I need to... The first thing, the way, the freedom from sin, always, the first base of the moving towards freedom of sin is agreeing with God about our sin. That's actually what confession is. Confession is not saying I'm sorry. Catholic confession is just ruin the word, right? Because it's not going, I'm sorry, I'll try not to do it again. What do I need to do to pay penance for it? Oh, say 47 Hail Marys or whatever you're going to do. Light a candle and we're good. You know, whatever. Sorry, I don't. But that's not confession. Confession is agreeing with God about it in your soul, not on the outside. Oh, it's a bad thing. I know. I don't want to do that anymore. I really would like to. No, I don't want to. I won't do it anymore. Okay, I'll really, really try not do it anymore. Okay, you're good. That's not confession. Confession is being willing to have God transform my heart to the things I like and the things I want to do and the things that give me a rush or the things that excite me, that I'm willing to have those transformed and hate the things that I've grown up loving. You know, I'm a diehard romantic. And that about ruined my life because I didn't agree with God. It about ruined my life because my fondness of my memories of exotic, erotic romance weren't necessarily in line with God. And the enemy was able, as a result of that, to about destroy me and my family. Because my statement in life was, with that passion, I'd rather die. I'm not going to live a passionless life. Wrong. About destroy, because I didn't agree with God about, when I think of immoral, outside of marriage, romance, and have a positive feeling about it, I'm spitting in God's face. I'm spitting in His face. I'm in utter rebellion. I'm just being real honest here. I had to say, I am willing to give up those romantic feelings that I've had all my life. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't necessarily as a little boy. It was somewhere in the Yukon in a log cabin all my life growing up, you know, with my best friend and my lover and, you know, she was everything and my passionate, romantic person doing with, and then I'm married and the guy, oh crap, now what? Right? Don't look at me like that. You know? Now what? You know? It ain't quite looking like the picture. You know? And, but to maintain and hold on to a picture, outside of that, at the point of letting the enemy go, oh man, I don't like this, I don't want this, I don't want to live this way, I can't live this way. And I say, God, I am willing to have you eradicate that my view of romance, my view of what it would be, the ultimate passionate romance, and have me see it as you do, and you hate it. And you see it as ugly and wretched and terrible. It was the beginning of being set free. Okay? I'm going to tell you. I mean, you think, wow, my life, I might as well, because I don't care. I don't really care about money. I don't really care about business. I don't really care about what you really think about me. Pardon me. You know, I don't really care about those things. You know, what do I care about? I care about passion and romance. And I don't care if you're there or not. If I'm by myself, I'm fine. Okay? I just, you know, just want to feel, you know, doing it. But that outside me needing to give that up about what the thoughts, and you all know on some level what I'm talking about. Those thoughts that can spur that, man, that just seems like what would be the happiest feeling or the best feeling or the wondrous feeling doing it, and to see that is, that's a terrible thing. Immorality, adultery. And, but you are not going to be set free from your bondage to sexual sin until you're willing to agree with God about it. I think that's the greatest step, first step in submission. God, I'm willing to let you renew my mind, to renew the way I think, to change the way that I view life. I'm willing to give that up. It's easier to give the outside up. Okay? It's easier to give the outside up because we can get praise, we can get feedback, we can get whatever, you know, that tends to make that easier and more motivated to do it. The inside, I'm just going to hold on to this little secret right here. You know, it's none of your business. You know, I can just hold on to it in case I need a little excitement or think about something that makes me feel good or something. But you're, I don't know what I want to say. I want to say you're screwed. You know, you're in trouble. Okay. You're not going to move ahead in that state. Because that's not confession of your sin. That's not agreeing with God about your sin. It's not being willing to hate what He hates. Love what He loves and hate what He hates. And that's, we need to be in agreement with God about that, or we will always be held captive. The enemy will always be able to hold us captive because we remain in rebellion. Because it is a matter of the road to freedom is to agree with God about our sin, no matter how terrible that seems. You know? I want to like just whatever. I don't need to go there. But yes. Yes, I'm going to. You know, I would have to say that was the beginning of for the first time of passionate sexuality with my wife. That was the first time that God was able to bless our marriage in a way, and we've been hanging out for 50 years pretty quick. We've been hanging out since we were little kids. And tragically, we lost so much of that because we weren't willing to agree with God about sin in our hearts. Or on the outward. I'm not a boy to pretend a whole lot. I didn't spend a whole lot of time in church when I was knowingly in rebellion to God. I didn't spend any time in church. You know, I know I'm not very good at pretending. So we wasted a good part of our marriage because I wasn't willing to give up my feelings about sin in my heart. And when I was willing to do that, you say, die to your dreams. You just gotta die to your dreams. Shut up. The dreams that the enemy put in you, the dreams that the enemy inspired, that he created, that he fostered, because they're in disagreement with God. Not all dreams. God gives us dreams. You know? And we shouldn't be willing to die to those. But we should be willing to die to those that the enemy fostered and created in us. And developed. Solidified. Gave us our little treasure box. Okay? We lay that at the altar. We say, God, I'm willing to give this up. I'm willing to agree with you about my sin, and I'm willing to turn away, because that's what it means. If I hate something, I'll turn away from it. It's not a matter of strong feeling. It's a matter of obedience and turning away from it. That is the road to freedom, you guys. I didn't think erotic, passionate sexuality was possible with my wife. I'll just be real frank. I mean, we'd always been very sexual since we were way too young. That had never been an issue. But there's a big difference in being sexually fervent and romantic or passionate. We're free as God created it to be. Where there's no guilt, there's no shame, there's no baggage. And it's not just a sexual fervency, it's a passionate, wondrous thing that happens. I know that now. Because I was willing to give up what the enemy had shaped and formed in me. I wouldn't have never known it otherwise. I bet this honeymoon was better than your last one, pardon me, without even talking to you. Because that's the process you're in. And that God knows the right way. God knows. And doing it His way is the only way. Agreeing with Him about our sin is the only way. When it comes to murder, we don't get a hall pass. All of us need to put the correction, allow the correction to happen in us that me responding in a fit of anger because of personal offense, personal hurt, is wrong. Let me read a couple of verses because I think this will. James chapter 19, or chapter 1, doesn't have 19 chapters. James chapter 1, verse 19 and 20. This you know, my beloved brethren, but every one of you be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. For the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. Wrong to be angry? No, he doesn't say it's wrong to be angry. There's another one that I think is really important in Ephesians chapter 4. Verse 26. It's a big statement. We've all heard it, but it's important. It says, be angry. Be angry. You realize that's a commandment. Be angry, and yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down in your anger. And do not give the devil an opportunity. Put that with, be slow to speak. Slow to anger. What are we angry about? Are we angry about the things of God? Is it because we agree with God about sin? Should I be angry when somebody murders someone else? Mm-hmm. I should be angry about murder. Should I be angry when somebody commits adultery with someone else? Mm-hmm. I should. I should be angry. Knowing the destruction and devastation and wreck that is. There's things to be angry about, but we're not to sin. And just the same. Just the same, you say, when it comes to abortion, well, what do you mean if you're going to save the life of a mother? We're talking about two different things here, honey. You know? Complete different things. A baby might die, a mom might die, either way. An abortion, or trying to save the life of a mother. There's complete different intention, and that makes all the difference in the world. Am I trying to honor God and saving life? Or am I dishonoring God? And willfully taking a life out of my own response and convenience. Obviously, you fight for life. Maybe they both live. Maybe one dies. Maybe they both die. But you fight for that, right? That has nothing to do with abortion. As we know it. As we speak of it. The same thing with anger, right? Anger is an attribute of God that should be part of us. Mainly the reason we don't get angry, we don't agree with God about sin. We don't see it the way God sees it. We don't hate it. We don't see its destructive nature. We don't see the, how it devastates lives and destroys people. Okay? So we're not angry about it. I hope, again, it has me. I often feel like it's not fair that spending time looking at reading, researching, I get the most advantage and benefit, and I'm grateful for it. The last few weeks I'm beat up over it because I realize that I have not agreed with God about my sin, and I need to. Fortunately, you can teach old dogs new tricks, right? By the power of the Spirit of God. So, let's pray. Without your mercy and your grace, because of your holiness, we would be dead. We'd remain dead in our trespasses and transgressions against you, things that we come against you in our sin. We would, So I am thankful for your mercy and your grace. I'm thankful for your forgiveness. Don't let us forget that your forgiveness didn't come just because you were a nice guy. That's a blasphemous thought even to have. Your forgiveness came because you killed Jesus in our place. I ask that you would cause us to somehow transform our hearts and our minds to see the severity of sin. We live in a culture that doesn't even know what sin means. It doesn't believe in sin. Mistakes, somebody else's fault. Okay, I'm sorry. Whatever it might be, but it's not, doesn't see sin as you see it. So it's difficult for us, and I'm sorry. I'm sorry for giving the enemy ground to allow us to feel self-righteous when we're in rebellion and disobedience to you. God, please imprint in our hearts that the critical thing here is that we are willing to agree with you about our sin, not just be compliant and remain in rebellion, but to be submissive. And that means to agree with you about our sin, to hate it as you do, not to see it as good. I ask that you would please protect, guard, guide our time together. I think the next hour we spend together is sacred ground. It causes us to see it as that, not just another potluck. Hi, all of a sudden Gene said it's potluck tomorrow, and I thought, didn't we just do that? Time goes by so fast, and I'm so grateful for the privilege and opportunity to share a meal with people that I don't get to share a meal with very often. To share a meal with the kids, the families, and care about each other and love on each other and bond together. To be an example, to be a light to the children. God, please cause us to see the importance as you see it. I'm confident that you see it as greatly important. Greatly important. And it's not about the food. Thank you for making potatoes, I guess. But it's about loving each other and caring about each other. So cause us to do that in a way that would be honoring to you. Amen.